Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Earth Station 1 podcast. That's right, folks, we are here to go back to the movies. And we are all into it this time. We are here to talk about Spider-Man Homecoming, the sixth movie featuring the web crawler. Well, kind of seventh on the big screen because he did appear in Civil War. So, yeah, this is Spider-Man at its best. And we're going to talk all about it. And we got a great crew to talk Spider-Man and his amazing friends. That's right. He does have friends in this one. So it should be kind of fun to do. Do you count Iron Man as his friend? Maybe. I don't know. But speaking of friends, we got a great return to the show. Nanook of the North is back. That's right, folks. We're talking to Mr. Mike Gordon. He's here.
Howdy.
So how was your Eskimo adventure, my friend?
No Eskimos, actually. We didn't go that far north, but it is good to be back on the station, sir.
It's great to have you. And you know,
it's only in a week.
I know, it's weird. It feels like it's been so much longer since you've been on the show.
Yeah, it was actually the longest vacation I've had in a long time. So it was about 10 days, which is, that just feels like a lifetime.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Lacey did an admirable job filling in with you when we talked about Guy Ritchie last week.
I'm surprised I still have a job.
Well, I was meaning to talk to you about that, but we'll talk after the show. I'm thinking, you know, bumping your pay up. So it's good. So it is great to have you back, my friend. And in a moment, we'll talk all about your trip. I'm curious to hear all about it. But show is, of course, brought to you by the fine folks at the ESOAmazon.com store, which we're going to have a very special announcement about it at the end of the show. But for right now, you can go to the ESO website and, you know, go right on ESO Amazon and click on it. Shop to your heart's delight and, you know, help support the station. Or if you don't want to do that, just go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon and go to Amazon.com and you could do all your back to school shopping. That's right, kids. It's almost back to school time already. God, that's horrible. I just heard groans from the other room. William was listening on that one. He doesn't want to hear that. Yeah, he has to go for his senior year starting. I know. A couple weeks. I'm going to have a senior. Ah, God, that makes me a senior in some ways. But that's a whole different story. But, you know, we'd love to hear from you guys, as we like to say. And thank you for everything you guys have been doing. People have been leaving feedback for us up on the iTunes and also, of course, on Stitcher Radio and, you know, all that kind of thing. And speaking of feedback and growing, we have a new podcast joining us, and we will be meeting them in our second segment during the Geek Seat. That's right. Life in a Kilt is joining the ESO Network. I'm really looking forward to that. But before we get to that point, Mr. Mike was up on the high seas of the northern high Alaskan waters. Is it the Arctic Sea up there, or is it still the Pacific?
It's still the Pacific.
Okay. So yeah, tell us.
We reached the South. Yeah. Look, it was a great experience. I definitely encourage all Americans to check out the 49th state, I believe, right? Because Hawaii came afterwards.
Yes.
And you know, Alaska is something that we always wanted to see. And look, with Michelle and I's budget, we didn't think that was ever going to happen. So first and foremost, I want to thank my parents for and the family actually as a whole for helping us join them. It was not only a vacation to get away for a while, but it was a celebration of my dad's 80th birthday. So my parents, my sister, my brother-in-law, my nephew, and Michelle and I were all on board. We went through Norwegian cruise lines, and we were on the Jewel, and a pretty large ship. It's not the largest one I've been on. I've been on a couple cruises, mostly in the Caribbean. But this one, you know, was very big. It, I think that it holds about, 2,600 people, as far as, actual people who are going on the cruise, and then another 1,000 or so people who are working there. So it was a pretty big vessel. And, we started, in Seattle, which I'd never been to before. And I didn't get to see much of the city, before we left.
Sorry, I miss it.
But I'm sure you do. It was hot as blazes there. I guess they're having some sort of heat wave this year, because everybody we talked to said it was just, this summer was brutal. And I think it felt hotter there the first day we were in Seattle than it did it when we left Atlanta. But yeah, so we left port of Seattle, and then we made our way up through, we had a day at sea. Then we made our way to the southernmost port of Alaska, the Interior Passage. To a place called Ketchikan. And Ketchikan is like in the top five, I think, of cities, quote unquote cities in Alaska. Look, there's not a lot of people in Alaska, period. So what they consider a big city is not quite the same. But still, it was pretty charming. We went on a tour of the town, and there's a lot of touristy spots because tourism is its number two, I think, industry there, whereas salmon canning is number one. Now, unfortunately, we weren't there for the big salmon swim, which all the salmon usually come through in late summer. So if you're going there in August, which I would recommend, you'll see salmon, the lake, the rivers will be full of salmon swimming upstream, spawning, doing their thing. So I think if you're into that, you definitely want to make sure that you're going there around August, September. My parents had been there once before in September, and they said they saw a lot of fish, a lot of salmon there. So, beautiful scenery the entire trip. Because you're on the Interior Passage, almost every time you look out and see on deck on the ship, you'll see these beautiful mountain ranges to your right and sometimes to your left. It's a little cooler. It's about, I would say, in the upper 50s, 60s there. So sometimes you need a jacket. When we hit Juneau, it was really rainy. And actually, it rained a little bit, too, when we were in Ketchikan. But the scenery was gorgeous all the way. The air was fresh. God, fresh air. When there was no clouds, which was rare, you could see the night sky. That was great. So from a scenery standpoint, it gets an A++ for me. From a wildlife standpoint, it's tremendous. We saw bald eagles. They're like pigeons up there. They're just everywhere. And they're pretty, they're not cool birds either. And a lot of people probably know more about eagles than I do, but, they're scavengers, and they're lazy, and they're pretty bad, actually. And they're no longer endangered either. Not to say that you still, I mean, because they're a national bird of ours, you can't touch them. You can't even touch a feather if it falls on the ground. They're still magnificent looking birds, at least when they're older. They're just beautiful looking. We saw some seals. Then we went to the second port of our journey, which is Juneau, which is the capital of Alaska. A lot of government there. We saw the actual capital building, which is it's on the list of most attractive capital buildings in the country. It's 50th on that list. Really gorgeous. We saw the governor's mansion, where I think Sarah Palin stayed for 2 weeks until she decided she didn't like it. And there from Juneau, we didn't see much of the city because that was our excursion when we did a whale watch. So we went out to sea. We saw some humpback whales. Beautiful experience. I wish I could have captured them better on film, but unfortunately, when you do that sort of thing, you have to have a really quick reflexes and a really powerful zoom, and I had neither. So I got to see them. We got along with some sea lions. and some other birds that were quite new to me, but very cool. Very cool to see these huge creatures, these whales in action. Was amazing. One of them was like sort of flipping around, and you could see its huge fins waving to us. It was amazing. They're just magnificent creatures. Prior to that, we had seen off the bow of the ship, the actual cruise ship that we were on, we saw some orcas. And then going into our last stop in Alaska was Skagway. We saw some dolphins, or porpoises, rather. I don't know what the difference is, but we saw porpoises. So if they're not the same thing, we definitely saw porpoises. If they're the same thing, we saw dolphins too. And that was great. And then Skagway is a little different. Skagway is a sort of it's a national park, sort of preserved as if it was still in the Gold Rush age town, where it's just basically for tourists. They have 900 people that stay there year round. They import about another 1,000 people there for the tourist season. And so there's a lot of kids working there from colleges and a lot of other people helping out with tours. But it was a great experience. Anybody who likes the show Deadwood would really like Skagway, because it was the last stop in Alaska before people could go up and trek up, I believe it's the Yukon, to go for gold. And this town was run by a mobster, and it was a very bloody history to it. There was a lot of lawlessness, a lot of prostitution, a lot of crime, and a lot of people just trying to make their way. This is the way that people thought they were going to make their riches, by going up and getting gold, but they had to stop at Skagway. And if they could survive that, man, that said a lot, because it was a tough town. And it really reminded me when I was watching the history of it and listening to stories about it, that it was really reminiscent of shows like Deadwood. So I definitely thought that was cool. The weather was perfect for that day. It was beautiful. It was sunny. It was a nice breeze. I think it was in the 80s. Just a gorgeous day. It was probably the best day that we had on the entire trip. After that, we made our way to Victoria, which is in Canada, not part of Alaska. It's in Canada, and I don't know if you've ever been to Victoria, Mike, but it's gorgeous. Yes, you have. I know you have.
Yeah, I gave you recommendations where to go.
Yes, yes. Unfortunately, we didn't make it to high tea. We had a limited time there. We did see the outside of the Empress and take some photos and all that, as well as the beautiful Capitol building that they've got right across the way there. And then
not a Capitol building, Parliament building.
Parliament building. Excuse me. Right. It's Canadian.
Exactly. It's a whole other country there, my friend.
We also went to Point Zero, which was kind of fun. I took a lot of pictures of totem poles throughout the entire trip, actually, because they're kind of like tikis for me. I have a thing for totems. They're the way they're made. They look gorgeous. They're sort of an Alaskan, you know, tribal similarities to tikis. So I don't think that's a big surprise to anybody. But yeah, so I found myself taking a lot of pictures of those. And then the cruise was over. We made our way back to Seattle. Michelle and I decided to stay, since we'd never been to Seattle. We decided to stay in Seattle for another day, and that was kind of fun. We got to go to Top Pot Donuts, which is, I guess, a chain. Is it just in Seattle or is it all over Washington?
Just in Seattle.
It's so we had some great donuts, and that experience was cool. We also went to the Museum of Popular Culture, which is an amazing place. The outside of the building looks insane. It looks like somebody on drugs really just I don't know what they were doing.
Well, but it was designed originally to be a guitar that had been broken.
Well, it looks a lot worse than that. I mean, yeah, it's crazy looking.
It was supposed to be the music experience.
They have a lot of music there. Yes. Still, they have a lot of exhibits. So we spent, I think, 6 hours there, because we went through a lot of them. And if you're interested in any sort of pop culture, particularly if you're interested in geek pop culture, science fiction, fantasy, horror, music, you have to go to this museum. It is amazing. it definitely is a must have. The exhibits that were going on while we were there, they had one on David Bowie, photographed by Mick Rock, and those were absolutely gorgeous. They also had a Jimi Hendrix exhibit there, which was very nice. And they had an exhibit of guitars that was through the years. That was amazing. So they have and they actually have guitars from famous musicians like a couple from Kiss, like Eric Clapton, like Ray, Dave Davies. They've got like tons of stuff in there. That's it. You just go, wow. And then they also have exhibits on Fantasy. The one on Fantasy has the actual dress worn by Judy Garland in Wizard of Oz, the Dorothy dress. They have the actual hat from the Wicked Witch of the West. They have the actual costume by the lion in the Wizard of Oz. So they've got those outfits, which are they're amazingly well preserved and they look great. They've got Lord of the Rings fans will be happy. They've got Harry Potter stuff there. They've got outfits from the Highlander movies. So that's pretty cool. That's in the Fantasy. In horror, they've got all sorts of – I'm not a huge horror fan, but we sped through there. There's a lot of cool stuff in there. They also have science fiction and really, more importantly, the most impressive to me – was they have a 50th anniversary Star Trek exhibit, which was amazing. It was two floors, and they have it's behind glass, so you can't touch it, but they have the actual console and chair from the original Enterprise set, 1960s show. If you don't geek out when in the presence of that, I can't help you because man, even Michelle was like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm looking at this. I've seen replicas. Heck, we've sat on replicas of the bridge and that's pretty geeky. I mean, you get the goosebumps doing that, but this is the actual bridge set of the original series. It's quite impressive. They've got actual costumes from there. It's great. I'm not going to talk much more about that because, look, anybody who can get to Seattle and go there, it's definitely worth it from a geeky perspective. You will love it. And it doesn't even – the price, it wasn't that bad at all to get in. For that kind of experience, I definitely would do it again. And you will just plan for it being a big day because there's a lot of stuff to cover throughout all of that. The last 3 days, we did a lot of walking. And my feet are still sore, but it was a great experience. Overall, I have to thank first my family for inviting us to come and making it possible for us to come. It was a great experience, one that we'll never forget. It's great to spend time with the family as well. I'm glad I was with them to do it. Also have to thank the folks at Norwegian Cruise Lines. They treated us really well. The staff there was great. The entertainment was fantastic. Particular shout out to guitarist Carrie Stone. She kept us entertained for many nights. She was fantastic. And also a big thanks to Delta Airlines for getting Michelle and I up there safe and sound without incident. I heard there were some incidents on some other Delta planes while we were traveling, so I'm glad it wasn't us. Everybody else, you know, in the Seattle area, in all the ports that we went to, we had a great time, a great experience. I can't recommend it enough. I mean, I know everybody talks about going on vacation and laying on the beach somewhere, and obviously you want to just chill. I think going up and seeing these sites, it's great. There's great scenery. You want to talk about relaxation. When you're on deck, just looking at these beautiful mountains go by and just watching the waves, it's just, there's something really calming about that. It was just what the doctor ordered for us. And I think it's a great experience that a lot of people should do.
That is awesome. I'm glad you had a great time. And the pictures you posted were just amazing. And I can't wait to see the rest of them.
There's a ton. I did not get to post even half of them because one thing I will say is when you're doing a vacation like this, you do have to plan accordingly as far as your coverage. And there were some things that I was a bit confused about that I'm still confused about. So I was able to send out some pictures and whatnot throughout the week, but not as much as I wanted to. So I've got a lot that I'm going to go through and probably post on Facebook and whatnot. So I'll make sure that I do that. So hopefully I can show them off and show that it truly is a trip that more people should take.
Oh, definitely. Definitely do it before, you know, everything melts, basically.
Well, that is a concern. I tell you what, one of the things that we did between ports, between Juneau and Skagway, we were supposed to see a glacier. We were supposed to tour around a huge glacier, but because of the fog and the weather conditions, we didn't quite make it. We had to turn back and then go right to another port because we were off schedule. But before the captain had decided to turn around, when we were going up that fjord, that we just saw chunks, I mean, huge chunks and thousands of them of blue ice from this glacier that we were heading to, just floating toward, like we were just going through this. It was an amazingly surreal sight, and just made you really, like, whatever your thoughts are on global warming and weather control and all that kind of stuff, I have to say that, you know, when you go up there and you look around, I don't see how you can not want to conserve this beautiful land that we still have. So that's really important.
Exactly. Please, please, folks, you know, that's what it's about. And don't believe when they say you could see, you know, Russia from your front yard.
Don't even try that joke. They are so tired of that. Don't even try that. They don't even really like to mention Sarah Palin's name up there anymore.
Exactly. What was that governor's name? I don't remember. It's okay.
Exactly.
So it's pretty cool, though. So very cool. I'm glad you had a great trip, my friend. And sounds like, you know, just a wonderful time. And you got to experience my old stomping grounds, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's the first time I'd ever been in Seattle. And Michelle and I would like to go back. I mean, there was a lot to do there, and we only scratched the surface. Like I said, we spent so much time at that museum. Definitely was nice to sort of knock off two other states off the list of states that I haven't visited yet. And certainly if any has more information and wants more suggestions that they're thinking about going to Alaska, they have any questions whatsoever, please feel free to reach out to me. I'd be glad to talk more about it. I could talk endlessly about it. I could do a podcast just on that.
Well, if you keep it up, you probably will. Well, very cool, my friend. And, you know, definitely feel free to write Mike. He'll definitely be very glad to tell you all about his trip. So with that being said, let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment with a new podcast joining the network.
Hi, this is Michelle with the Iconic Rock Talk Show Moment, and Queen is back in the news. They're always doing something in honor of what would have been Freddie Mercury's 71st birthday this September 5th. His image is going to appear on the tail fins of two Boeing 787 Dreamliners for Norwegian Air. They haven't released the actual image yet. There's some mock-up photos online. Whatever they do, it's Freddie. It's going to be really cool. He is the latest person to be part of their Tail Fin Heroes campaign. They've had Roald Dahl, who wrote Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, on a plane. Pioneer pilot Amy Johnson, aviation entrepreneur Freddie Laker, and soccer player named Booby Moore. I think if your name is Booby Moore, you should just get your image on a plane anyway. Norwegian is a budget airline. If you're flying through New York City, Fort Lauderdale, Oslo, Stockholm, and or Bangkok, I'm jealous, but this is where you have the best chance to see one of these. Queen and Adam Lambert have also announced their first ever live concert virtual reality experience. It's called VR the Champions. Haha, see what they did there. It was filmed in Barcelona last May. It's through Vertigo, VRTGO, in full 360 degree view. There's a 30-second trailer that you don't need a headset to see at vertigo.com, VRTGO.com. They say that it lets the viewer go past the front row and, like, hover over the crowd and fly around the band on stage. And, of course, Brian May, 3D fanatic that he is. This is his little brainchild. It's available on the Vertigo platform for iPhone, Android, all other VR platforms. Accessible through most browsers. You can also use Brian May's Owl VR kit to see it. It's $9.99 US, $9.99 UK pounds, and €10.99. A band that took up the torch for the big bombastic Queen sound, you may remember The Darkness from a few years ago with Thing Called Love. They went through some success, followed by not so much success. They're now back with a label about to release their fifth album. And this comeback is being chronicled in what's called a philosophical, darkly humorous, and deeply personal comeback film by Rick Emmett, who's worked with Jay-Z, Idris Elba, some other folks. It's in the crowdfunding stage at Indiegogo. They're so theatrical that this just seems like a natural, and Emmett promises this is much different from expectations, not your run-of-the-mill documentary. One person they interview is Chris Jericho from the WWE, who says that he got turned on to The Darkness and Avenged Sevenfold because they were the guys playing guitar solos at the time in the early 2000s when no one else did, not even Metallica. So, okay, metalhead argument in 3, 2, 1. If you'd like to see this film, head over to Indiegogo and check it out and throw in your support. There's just under 3 weeks. And there's also just under 3 weeks left in the Ham for All Challenge. Hamilton fans, take part of this. This was started, of course, by Lin-Manuel Miranda. It benefits the Immigrants We Get the Job Done Coalition. Donate at least $10, sing a few bars of your favorite Hamilton tune, that part is optional, and challenge your friends to do the same. The incentive is 2 VIP tickets to the grand opening of Hamilton, L.A., travel and accommodations included, after party with the cast, meet and greet and photo op with Lin-Manuel himself. You can go online to see some of the celebrity challenges out there. Some are better than others. It's the thought that counts. The best ones I've seen, of course, Jonathan Groff, Groff Sauce. It's kind of unfair, but he's doing Angelica's part in Satisfied. With Lin-Manuel. Jaime Camille and Weird Al both slay in completely different ways. What did I miss? And Josh Groban. Burn. The earth stops on its axis for 60 seconds. You can check them out at YouTube, of course. Hashtag Ham4, numeral 4, all. And to take part or support this, you can go to prizeo.com, P-R-I-Z-E-O.com. This has been the Iconic Rock Talk Show moment. Check out the blog at iconicrocktalkshow.wordpress.com. Catch you next time.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back. Now we are here to talk with some new podcasters to the network. Let's welcome Sherry and Rick from Life in a Kilt Podcast.
Hey.
Hey.
Hi.
How are you?
Howdy. Welcome. Welcome to the station. Welcome to the network.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We're very excited.
And we are excited to have you. So, kilts, tell us more.
Where to start?
Underneath.
The Life in a Kilt podcast started as part of the Life in a Kilt, which was a blog that I had done. When I turned 50, I wore a kilt every day for a year to celebrate my 50th birthday. And after that year was up, we changed it to Life in a Kilt instead of a year in a kilt. And not long after it changed to Life in a Kilt, we started the podcast. This was 2013.
It was.
And we did 7 episodes and then we stopped.
Because there was nothing else to talk about.
It was very, very kilt focused at the time, and all the topics kind of got used up. And we didn't record again for about 2.5-3 years. And then about a year ago from now, we started talking about doing the podcast again. And we did a little bit of planning. And then last October, we started it back up, and we've been going ever since.
Very nice.
Yeah.
And that's so you both are, had you been podcasting at all before, or what were your origins with podcasting? Had you been listening to a lot of them, or what were some of your favorites for inspiration?
Well, sort of. I mean, my background is in theater, and I did stand-up comedy for a while and broadcasting and that kind of stuff. Nothing as far as broadcasting. I had a radio show, but I'd never done any kind of podcasting, and it's something that I had always wanted to get into. So we did a little bit of researching. And
Rick is a large podcast listener. He has several that he likes to listen to.
I'm not that large. I'm losing weight.
No, you're big.
But yeah,
but dude, you're really tall. So
there you go.
That's right. But I do. I listen to a lot of podcasts, and I would listen to a lot of duo podcasts. And there's a podcast up in Portland called Fun Employment Radio, which is one of my all-time favorites. And it's really kind of morning radio type of format. And I got really addicted to that just when I started listening, doing the research, and that we kind of used their setup as a model. They're very different from ours, and they're very Portland-centric, I guess. But I kind of like their banter, and we know each other really well. We've known each other for a long time, so I think we're really good co-hosts. And so we really sort of use the Kilt as sort of a springboard. Kilts are just a small part of what we do. It's really the life part. It's more like what we do. We try to be entertaining and be humorous and talk about everything. But, you know, the Kilts are definitely a part of it.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, very cool. Well, what would you say? I mean, I know we're going to, because the geek seat is looming. What would you say is your primarily interest as far as geekdom goes? Where are your passions?
Mine is definitely both in different television programs and movies, comic books. I would also say that I'm definitely into gaming. I can sit down at any table and play any game as soon as I watch it once. Other than that, I do geek out a little bit about, cats.
We're both big Renaissance Fair people.
Yes.
And do a lot of that. I'm a big comedy nerd, and and she got me into Doctor Who. I'd never heard anything about it much, and she got me to start watching it, and I kind of got addicted with Doctor Who. So yeah, we kind of bleed over into all different areas, and
he really nerds out about clowns. He can name clowns. Like, you would never know these people, and he'll just ramble off names, and they're clowns.
Well, I wanted to be a clown when I was a kid, and I applied to Ringling Brothers Clown College to go to be a clown, and I didn't go, but clowns were sort of my early heroes.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, I was big into mime and clowns and all that kind of stuff.
I need to introduce you to my friend Chris Brown, because he actually does some adult clown stuff for Adult Swim.
Oh, fun.
And so he does a lot of horror stuff. And he's done some really scary clown stuff. So you might actually like that.
And I would hate it. I'm just saying.
Well, we have a good time. We try to be entertaining. We do a lot of sketch comedy on our show. We do beer reviews. This past Halloween, we did a storytelling thing where we told, I think we had 5 different stories. We did submissions from our listeners where they would send in horror stories and we would read them and sort of act them out a little bit. So we love to get our listeners involved. We try to have a lot of inventive ways. Each month we have a listener challenge. And we put it out for the listeners to kind of do something. It's a different challenge every month to get involved. And just whatever we can do to get the listeners involved. It's just fun, you know, whatever. We just kind of want to kind of goof off and have a good time.
And it gives us an excuse to see each other.
Yeah, we hang out a little bit.
I understand that completely. Absolutely. Well, very cool. Well, we are very excited to have you part of that work. And we definitely encourage all our listeners to check out your podcast. And in addition to the website for ESO Network, where can people find you online?
Our base station is lifeandakillpodcast.com. Mm-hmm. And then we also have a Facebook page, Instagram, Twitter. What else do we got out there? Life in a Kilt has a YouTube page, and some of our podcast videos. We did a live broadcast last week, which was an hour long, and that's on there. So we're kind of all over the internet, but most of the time you can find us on our Facebook page and at lifeinakiltpodcast.com. And as far as the podcast itself, obviously through ESO, but we're also on iTunes and Stitcher and all of those places where you can find good podcasts.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, very cool. Again, we are very excited. And, you know, provided that you survive the geek seat, we look forward to listening to many of your podcasts to come.
Perfect.
Excellent. I'm ready.
They might be recording right from the station, so it's okay.
Well, Mike, I believe they are both sufficiently tied down.
Well, are you sure? Because are those the Alaska knots that you've been trying on? Or
yes, that's why I that's what I've been trying out, yes.
Or we can call them salmon knots. You know, what the hell?
Ow, ow, a little bit loose. Ow. Little, come on.
Okay. There are no safe words, so don't even try, okay?
Pork and beans.
Nope, that was last week's. Sorry. All right, kids. First question in the geek seat. What was your favorite geek out moment?
My favorite geek out moment was actually when I met, surprisingly, Louis Anderson at an airport.
Really?
Yeah. And the way I met him is funny. I actually ran into him physically with my body. And, of course, I bounced off and fell down. And he helped me up. And he was very nice. He looked a little rough, but he did say that he was very sorry. And I told him, oh, my God, I love you, Louis Anderson. This was probably 15 years ago. And he was very gracious.
I'm a huge fan of the sketch comedy group Kids in the Hall. If you listen to our podcast, I talk about it probably more than I should. But I got to see them live when they toured a few years ago. And this was a huge thing for me. And they came out. I actually almost cried when they started the theme music, which was very embarrassing. But at the end of the show, I got to shake Dave Foley's hand.
Awesome.
From News Radio and, mm-hmm. and The Wrong Guy and all that. So, and I will tell you, Dave Foley's like the smallest guy in the group. He has gigantic hands. His hands are bigger than mine.
Wow.
We won't go into that. But okay. Yeah, he's a small guy, but huge hands.
Wow. So how about those Braves, huh? Yeah. Well, that is awesome. What was the most disappointing geek out moment?
Well, I do have a, I'm going to disappoint you here a little bit, because I am going to say that I did get to meet someone once upon a time that I was excited about meeting, and he was quite rude. He wasn't just, can't be bothered. He was rather flippant. And I was very excited about getting to meet him, and it didn't turn out well. But I'm not going to give names because I don't think that's fair.
I can't think of one.
Really?
Yeah, I can't think of one, really.
He's not easily let down.
No, I don't keep high hopes. So I'm not disappointed. Yeah.
I like that. Pleading the fifth right there, right in the spot. Yeah. What geeks you out the most?
What geeks me out the most? Star Trek. Anything having to do with Star Trek.
What about it?
Mostly just the idea of it. I've been watching Star Trek shows and movies since I was a little girl. And every time I see them in space, and that's where I wanted to be most of my life. I wanted to actually go to Cornell and study astrophysics. And
but
I
they kicked to, her out because she couldn't say
I
it.
Because I couldn't say it right. So I want to live in space. And so the idea of actually living in space and watching basically what is a soap opera in space just really is like where I want to be. That's my life.
I still get geeked out by Renaissance fairs, going to really good ones. And we had this thing a while back, we were going to go to a new one every year. But I don't know, the first time I went, it just totally floored me. It was better than I thought it was going to be. And I just love still walking through the doors, going through them, and just the atmosphere and costumes and all that kind of stuff. I just love it.
Should we look at the flip side of that, though, and say, what turns your geek off?
You know what turns my geek off is I love talking to people about just anything that, you know, they geek out about, or I geek out about, or we both in common geek out about. I really enjoy having those conversations, but when you're talking to somebody like that and suddenly they are one-upping you and they know it all and they have, you know, oh no, I'm right, you're wrong, things like that. It's like, can't we just enjoy this together, you know? And instead you've got someone who just happens to know so much more than you and they have to make it known. And that turns me off.
That was going to be mine as well. Yeah. When you're excited about something and you talk to somebody and they outdo you on it. Yeah. And tell you don't know what you're talking about.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Usually a really bad first date, as I like to say.
Yes.
What fictional character would you guys like to meet the most?
The entire crew of the Firefly ship Serenity.
Okay.
Firefly. No, what was the question?
What fictional character would you like to meet the most?
Maybe Han Solo.
Really?
Isn't he fictional?
Oh my God.
I think he's fictional. Maybe he's real. I don't know.
I think that is all of Star Wars is based on a true story.
Yeah, I don't know. He's just a badass, don't you think?
Yes, I do.
The whole attitude, especially I'm talking about like Empire Strikes Back version.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know. Maybe it's just Harrison Ford, but I mean, Raiders of the Lost Ark. You know, that Indiana Jones guy was.
He was pretty cool. I think he had a little bit of a crush.
Maybe a little bit. I guess.
Okay.
That turns me off.
Okay. What fictional character would you like to meet the least?
The Horde.
Who?
Horde. You don't know who that is? Mm-mm. Okay. Horde is a character who has he's an alien warlord. He has some run-ins with the X-Men on occasion.
Mm-hmm.
He is essentially a multiple personality psycho.
Okay. I've heard the name, but I know. Mine would be that stupid, and you know the name, and I'm sorry because I don't, but the stupid robot from Doctor Who.
K-9.
Yeah. I hate that thing.
Why do you hate K-9?
I've always hated it.
Affirmative.
I would like to blow it up. I think I want to change my fictional character I want to meet most to Rose Tyler.
I was going to say, I'm surprised that Billy has not made an appearance here.
I'll change that. I'm too old for her, but still, I would meet her. I can meet her, right?
You can meet her. That's I don't think you'd have a heart attack.
No, I just meet her and then blow up that robot.
Yeah. What is your favorite geek word, phrase, quote, or pose?
Pose?
Oh, wow.
You know, like live long and prosper pose. Or
right, mm-hmm. right. I mean, you know, probably, oh, come on. It's right there. I just had it. I aim to misbehave.
What is that?
Firefly.
Oh.
Yep.
Yeah. I've had to watch a lot of episodes of Firefly, too.
Well, I watch it at least twice a year.
Yeah. Binge watch it.
Yeah. It's kind of a thing.
Okay.
What about you? What's yours?
I don't have one. I don't know. I'd have to think.
Really?
I didn't study for this test.
Oh, Rick, come on. This is your shining moment.
I will say, this is sort of because of my comedy geekdom. I'm a big fan of Mark Maron and his podcast, WTF. And his catchphrase, he always says on his show, is, "How's that working for you?" And I met him backstage when I was kilted, and he just kind of looked me up and down, and he said, "What's going on?" And I said, "I've been wearing a kilt every day for my 50th birthday." And he just said, "Oh, how's that working for you?" So he said his little catchphrase straight to me. So that was cool.
I love that one.
Yeah.
What is your ideal geek occupation?
Ooh. Well, we have it already.
Actually, no.
Everything.
I don't have it.
Hmm. I do. Is an astronaut a geek occupation?
I think so.
Okay. Well, I'm an artist. I make a living as an artist, and we're both podcasters. So I guess you could say those are geek occupations, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. We're pretty good at it.
Yeah, so those are my ideal, and that's what I do. I always kind of wanted to do radio, and so this is sort of that opportunity.
Understand that.
Yeah.
What geek occupation would you not like to do?
Astronaut. I don't want to go into space. I'll let you do that.
Something really wrong with you. My least favorite geek occupation.
IT?
Yeah, IT.
Number one answer on the show, by the way.
That's what I do for a living, by the way.
I know, me too. I understand.
Okay.
All right, kids, you ready for your final question?
I think so.
All right. This is the time when we start hazing you guys, so.
Hot oil comes out.
Exactly.
Oh, it's supposed to be a bad thing?
I didn't say it was. What is your ultimate geek fantasy?
To live on the Starship Enterprise, the NX-01.
Oh, very cool.
Thank you.
Well, I guess I give mine away because it would be like, I wouldn't mind being one of the Doctor Who's with Billy Piper as my travel companion. Yeah, why not?
Okay.
That would be my ultimate, sure.
The kilted doctor.
I would wear the kilt more. You know, David Tennant is a McDonald. That's my family as well. We both wear the same kilt, but I think he wears it better than I do.
He wears it much better than you. I'm sorry.
Oh, thanks. You're not supposed to agree with it. Jeez. Yeah, that would be mine. That would be cool.
That is awesome. Well, kids, you've made it through the geek seat. Congratulations. You're now part of the station.
Yay. Huzzah.
Huzzah. Mr. Mike Gordon. Give them a little extra oomph and tell them what they've won.
You'll have won a lifetime subscription of the ESO Network, a value easily worth $16.04.
Nice.
Save me money. I can buy a bottle of wine now.
Now I know what I'm getting you for Christmas.
Cool.
Well, kids, you have to realize the value of that only works up here on the station. It's like Disney. It's like Disney.
Oh.
Like Disney bucks. Yeah.
Or Monopoly money.
Well. Monopoly money's worth more than that. Well, we are so happy to have you guys part of the station and part of the network. It's great to have you guys. You guys are going to be a fantastic addition. Before we let you guys get out of here, though, one more time, how can people find you?
Life in a Kilt podcast at gmail.com or on Facebook at Life in a Kilt podcast. They can also find us on Instagram and Twitter under Life in a Kilt Pod. Mm-hmm. But mostly Life in a Kilt Podcast at gmail.com and on Facebook.
That's gmail.com is our address, but just lifeinakiltpodcast.com is our address on the internet. Intranet.
On those tubes, tubes things.
We're not hard to find.
Nah.
Well, we will have your addresses and such. Well, not your personal addresses, but your website addresses up on our show notes so people can find you. And let's take a quick break. And we'll be back, and we're here to talk all about Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yay. Thank you, guys.
When you're in love, there's no time and no space. There's a permanent smile on your face. Your friends all complain.
Hey, it's Rick and Sherry from the Life in a Kilt podcast.
If you are a kilt wearer, a kilt lover, or simply like to gawk, come hang out with us every week on Life in a Kilt podcast.
We discuss kilt life, regular life, and everything in between and underneath.
We've got humor, interviews, sketch comedy, pop culture, beer reviews, even indie music. And we discuss it each week in a way that only we can.
Well, only the way I can.
Oh, hush. I discuss it so much better than
whatever.
You.
Whatever. Anyway, discover the joys of kilt life without ever leaving the comfort of your own headphones. Kilts aren't required, but if you've got one, feel free to buckle up.
That's the Life in a Kilt podcast with Rick and Sherry every week on the ESO Network.
What's up, guys?
So, to become an Avenger, are there, like, trials or an interview?
Do me a favor. Can't you just be a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man? Just stay close to the ground.
You're the Spider-Man from YouTube. Can you summon an army of spiders?
No, Ned, no.
Do you know him, too?
I stole his shield.
Can I try the suit on?
Badass.
The rich and the powerful, like Stark, they don't care about us. The world's changing, boys.
Time we change too.
These weapons are crazy dangerous.
Listen, Peter, forget the flying monster guy. There are people who handle this sort of thing.
The illegal weapons barrier was at 230. You missed it. No.
What if somebody had died?
I was just trying to be like you.
I wanted you to be better. I'm gonna need the suit back.
But I'm nothing without this suit.
If you're nothing without this suit, then you shouldn't have it.
I screwed up.
You need to stop carrying the weight of the world on your shoulders.
I want you to understand. I'll do anything to protect my family.
I know you know what I'm talking about.
So don't mess with me. I will kill you and everybody you love.
My friends are up there.
The guy is still out there. I just gotta do this on my own.
Just don't do anything stupid.
I got this.
All right?
Yeah.
Hey everyone, welcome back. Now we are here to talk all about Spider-Man Homecoming. God, is this the sixth Spider-Man movie since, you know, they started making them in over the last couple years? And the third Spider-Man out of it. So it's interesting. And we're going to talk all about it. And did we like it? Did we not? We'll figure it all out. And we got a great crew to join us this week. Of course, what could we do without our Marvel girl here? Jennifer Hartshorn, the MCU diva.
Hello, Marvel Universe.
How are you, Jen?
I am excellent, sir.
That's cool. And you're remote right now, actually.
I am. I am calling you from beautiful Norfolk, Virginia, where I'm doing my summer doctoral institute, and my brain is leaking out my ears.
Wow. So if you hear stuff dripping, you know what it is.
Yep. If you hear goo, that would be me.
Oh, nice. That's a pleasant thought.
Yeah.
Well, it's good to have you here. We also are here with our movie reviewers, Alex and, of course, Ashley. Welcome.
Which one of us is the diva?
Well,
I think we both know who the diva is.
Yeah, we know Alex.
Yeah.
I could have known that one for years.
Bring on our movie divas and Ashley.
Exactly. Welcome, both of you two.
Yeah. Good to be here.
Ashley.
Always nice to be back.
Great to have you both here. And it's going to be interesting to hear. Of course, we just have so much to dive into. This was interesting because it literally starts off the movie back where Avengers started.
Mm-hmm.
And you, like, well, right after
not Avengers, but Captain America Civil War.
No, it actually ends.
Oh, yes. You're right.
No, with Spider-Man. Yeah. It goes through the whole Civil War thing right before it and then going through to it. But, you know, it starts right after the Avengers movie and,
right. You
know, the destruction in New York.
Damage control.
Yep. Exactly. And that's interesting because they did introduce damage control in this. Had they ever done that before, or was this the first time?
Nope. This was the first time that they've mentioned it.
That was interesting because, you know, the characters are very well known in the comics. They had their own spinoff series for a little bit.
Yeah, they had a couple of miniseries during the late 90s. And I thought the casting choice of Tyne Daly as Amanda Waller was a great choice. That was nice.
It was actually a lot of fun, and it was interesting because she did play a great Amanda Waller.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But it was neat and got introduced right away to Michael Keaton's character as the Vulture. Mm-hmm. And he was actually a good guy at first.
I think he was more of an everyman.
Yeah.
He was a blue-collar guy who had found a way that he could really make some money by cleaning up the mess that the Avengers had left. And let's be honest, Tony Stark leaves a lot of messes.
Yep.
I mean, can we just go ahead and just state that flat out? Tony Stark leaves a lot of messes. That's what he does. That's his superpower. Break stuff. But I actually liked the way they developed Keaton's character in this film, in that he was absolutely he was that everyman who was tired of getting screwed over by the rich guy. And I don't know that he was, I don't know if he started off as about to become a villain when he's just like, let's keep this portion. I think he might have thought he was going to sell some of it off.
Mm-hmm.
But it just happened to be that, well, being an arms dealer turned out to be really, really profitable.
Well, exactly, because he was a demolition guy at first. And, you know, he was trying to protect his employees, you know, and such, because he hired all these people out and to, you know, help him do the cleanup. And then Damage Control walked in.
Yeah.
Now, that was something I had really appreciated, because he doesn't start off the movie as this big over the top villain. Mm-hmm. Like you said, he's an everyman, but then just slowly he starts making more and more choices, gets in deeper. Then you realize, oh, he's a bad guy, but it didn't happen overnight. He just took tiny steps, making these weapons, selling them to questionable groups, and then killing off one of his employees who's going to leave and rat him out. So he doesn't get to be the Vulture overnight. It kind of happens slowly. So I thought that was kind of an interesting, kind of more realistic take on a villain, I would say.
One of the things I like, that killing scene that you just mentioned, is beautiful, because like as soon as he does it, he turns around and goes, I thought that was the anti-gravity gun. So yeah. Clearly, I mean, the killing was an accident, which I thought was genius.
Mm-hmm. I think that it was particularly well set up, because they even call this out at one point, the fact that what Toomes is doing is exactly how Tony Stark made his money.
Yeah.
Is making weapons and selling them to bad guys. And you know, if you're okay with Tony Stark doing it, then why isn't it okay for him to do it?
Yeah.
Well, exactly. And that was interesting how he compared himself to Stark.
Mm-hmm.
And he was right in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've been saying for years that, you know, Age of Ultron in particular is, you know, that's the Tony Stark supervillain origin story, pretty much. I mean, he is so close to the line of being a supervillain, it's not funny. But he's a great character, and man, they have, I mean, I'm sure Robert Downey Jr. is just, you know, doesn't sign off on a, you know, doesn't sign up to play Tony in a movie unless the character is well written and is true to the way that he's played it. But he continues to get further developed and further more depth for that character, because, you know, when you think about it, one of the defining things about Tony Stark is he's got daddy issues. You know, he did not have a good relationship with his father. He did not have the kind of mentoring that he wishes that he had. And yet here he is repeating the exact same thing with the kid who is looking up to him, who just wants some of his attention and some of his time. And he's doing the same thing his dad did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting, especially when you consider the place that Tony Stark was in following Captain America: Civil War. Mm-hmm. He's lost about half of his friends and then has this revelation about his father. So I think he's trying to the best of his abilities to be really careful with Peter Parker. Like, he wants to mentor him, kind of help him and get support in a way that he didn't get from his dad. But he's also real cautious to kind of make some of these mistakes. And he doesn't want Peter to get in too deeply too quickly, which ends up kind of frustrating Peter a little bit, because he's all gung-ho and excited, ready to be one of the Avengers. And then Tony actually kind of pulls back and say, hey, let's slow down a little bit. And Peter has trouble understanding that.
And for all the time where it looks like, I mean, because Peter gets the impression that he's distant, that he's nonchalant, that he doesn't care. But through a lot of dialogue, we get moments where Tony is paying attention, Mm-hmm. He is keeping tabs on Peter even more so than Happy is, because he's listening to all the reports. He knows everything that's going on, but obviously he's still distant from him, and ultimately, you know, I mean, I liked the use of him in this to an extent, but I'm not sure. I think part of I think because we got so much Tony, I will say, and I hate to start off by criticizing the movie, but one of the thing, because I loved it, I loved the movie, but the one thing I will say is that as a big Spider-Man fan, I was sort of missing the great power with great power. I really was, because you know that Uncle Ben's a big part of him. And there's no mention of Uncle Ben in this. And there's no sense of his responsibility to the extent that I felt that there should be. So for that part of it, I thought if they had just included a little bit more of that, I think I would have been much happier with the movie. Overall, I was happy. But as far as a great Peter Parker Spider-Man movie, I was kind of missing Uncle Ben's, you know, presence there.
I was so glad that they didn't do the origin again, though.
I
didn't think they did.
But it's there. I mean, if you're going to mention, like, you know, the first rule of storytelling is show, don't tell. Mm-hmm. Like, we hear that Aunt May's having a bad time, but we don't see it ever. She looks like life is great for her. You know, other than worrying about her nephew, we think that, you know, she's just fine and everybody's like hitting on her and all that kind of stuff. And she's and really it's kind of more of a joke. There's no sense of loss. There's no sense of responsibility there. And I kind of wish that was in there. Now, that said, I'm not going to belabor it because I think it was overall there's a lot of good stuff that I want to get to. But I will say that I think the inclusion of Tony, that element in there, took away from the absence of Uncle Ben.
I think one of the problems with the film, and it's not really a problem so much, is the fact that because we're not given an origin story, and I'd like to join everybody else when I say thank God, is the fact that we don't know how long Peter's had his powers. We don't know how long it's been since Uncle Ben's death. It is absolutely possible, and we could see it in a deleted scene or something like that later on, that Aunt May is just putting on a strong front, because she is a rather strong character up until she has that moment where she's been trying to contact Peter all day, and he wouldn't answer his phone because he was busy trying to hold together a boat, which honestly, a valid reason not to answer your phone. but you know, if you want to look at the daddy issues that Tony Stark has and him playing the father figure slash mentor, you can actually go back to Civil War during the fight, because there's a moment in which Peter is I think knocked down, mm-hmm. and Iron Man kind of puts him in the corner and says, okay, stay here, stay safe. And so you've got that moment early on, and it's just kind of a buildup onto here. I personally would have liked to have seen a little less Tony Stark in this film, because and here's the thing. Robert Downey Jr. is so good at that role that when he's on screen, he is the only thing you're looking at. And it makes it really difficult to have a Spider-Man movie starring Iron Man.
I think that they did a better job with this, though, than, mm-hmm. you know, technically, I mean, Civil War was, mm-hmm. it should have been Avengers Civil War, but it was titled Captain America Civil War.
Right.
But really, realistically, that was as much Tony's movie as it was Captain America's.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
And in this case, you know, there's been some memes that have gone around about, you know, Peter and Steve commiserating about Tony coming in and stealing their movies. But I think I guess I was going into it dreading you know, thinking that this was going to be the Tony and his teen wonder sidekick kind of movie, because if you looked at the previews, Tony was in pretty much every scene. And, and it looked like there was not going to be any story that was not. And I mean, and when I first heard about Vulture, I was like, well, that sounds more like an Iron Man villain. It sounds like this is going to be a guy who hates Tony Stark. And why would he even be dealing with this, you know, small potatoes, you know, teenager thing? So I was actually going into it expecting to not be happy at the amount of Tony Stark. And so I actually came out of it going, well, that wasn't that bad. That was very much still Peter's movie, and Tony was on the sidelines. He's actually only in like four scenes, but because he is such a big presence, because he has such a big personality, because the character is so familiar, we all remember every second of the time that he was on screen.
Exactly. He puts on – if there was somebody born to play a role –
oh, yeah.
It was Robert Downey Jr. playing Tony Stark. Yeah. Not even playing Iron Man, but just playing Tony Stark.
Exactly.
And because of that, the scenes with Robert Downey Jr. feel like an Iron Man movie. It just feels like it's kind of placed in a Spider-Man movie. So, and again, this is not to – I think we pushed a lot of negative at the beginning of this. Despite the fact that I think we all agree that it's a good movie. So it's just an opportunity for us to say, you know what, we could have done something a little bit better, or would have liked something a little bit better. But
and to get on to the original point about Toombs and Michael Keaton, look, I mean, we want to talk about positive things about this movie.
Oh,
absolutely.
So when it was announced that Vulture was the main bad guy, okay, I've been Spider-Man's my guy. And I've been reading Vulture stories for as long as there I've been reading Spider-Man.
Right.
I could not tell you, like, though, that's not the guy I would have picked as being a bad guy, a big bad of a movie. And I thought, well, how are they going to make this work? Because it just, I mean, he's okay when he's part of the Sinister Six or something, but just by himself, Old Man Toombs, I don't think this is. Now, they did Norman Osborn him a little bit, you know, sort of a working man's Osborn.
That's kind of a big difference.
big time.
It's not in some of the ways that he relates to Peter. I mean, the whole like meet him at the door, have dinner with the daughter. Like that scene was really reminiscent not only of the comics but of Norman Osborn from like two movies ago, right?
Sure.
So and then some of the visual shots of the Vulture carrying Peter were very much like stolen, really, from Green Goblin shots carrying Peter. So there's a lot of, I mean, they really did kind of Osborn him a little bit, but to that extent, I mean, it works. It works really well. Michael Keaton plays it off like it's nothing really. Like he's just up for this. And look, I am perfect. Like he could have played Norman just as well. I mean, he's that good, but you just really do feel that he's just this. Now obviously he's taken it to the extreme, but you kind of feel like they always say that a great villain should be a hero in his own mind, and boy, you can really see that working in his brain.
Oh, all the way up to the ending scene. Sure.
Absolutely. He believes that what he's doing is right for him and for his family. And that's one of the things I will say this right now about this film. When it comes to Marvel Cinematic Universe, this is absolutely the best villain that has been done in the MCU, and it's probably the best superhero villain since Doc Ock in Spider-Man 2.
Agreed.
Are you counting – you're just talking about movies, right?
Right, right.
Yeah.
Because I was going to say, I'll throw him up against Kingpin and Kilgrave any day.
If we're putting in the TV, then no. Mr. Kingpin is the leader. Thank you, sir. And thank you, ma'am, for mentioning it. But no, I'm going to say something bad about the Kingpin. Hell no. I think as far as the cinematic, the movie universe, the big screen, and I want D'Onofrio on the big screen as the Kingpin against Tom Holland. I do want that. I want that so bad. But I definitely feel like this was the one of the very first times that we actually had a truly fleshed out villain that you could sit there and go, I understand his motivation.
Mm-hmm.
I understand the reasoning why he's doing this. I know his origin just by watching 5 minutes of this film.
Oh yeah.
And because of that, he's a much better villain. The twist that we get right before the homecoming dance.
Mm-hmm.
I figured it out like 10 minutes before it happened. And I was like, oh man, is that where they're going to go with this? And of course he answers the door. And right as he did that, I looked up at my wife and went, ta-da.
There was a gasp in the theater where I was.
Yeah. Yeah. And we got a lot of that in the theater I was at too. Which was great because it worked.
I got to ask about this though, because a friend of mine says they cheated and I'm not sure that they did, but we were talking about it and I thought it was, I mean, obviously if you know the comics, you know that Liz Allen is not Toombs's mm-hmm. Daughter. Right?
Right
now he insists that they said her name, her last name in the movie, but I didn't recall that. So I was like, when I, you know, was like looking back on it, I'm like, well, they never said her last name was Allen. I just kind of assumed it was because mm-hmm. I know the character. Did they actually say that it's Allen? Because
I don't think they did. I think they just called her Liz throughout the film.
Yeah, that would, because I was going to say that would be cheating a bit, but because obviously I think it's his real daughter. I don't think it's, you know, from a previous marriage or relationship mm-hmm. or whatever. Yeah. I mean, I got the sense from his lines and actually from everything that was in the movie that it's actually his daughter. And that actually works stronger that way, I think.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh yeah. And you know, one of the complaints, and I'm going to be that guy, I'll be the guy. And yeah. There was a lot of racist crap going on about the diversity in this movie.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, which was stupid.
Oh, I think so too.
You mean like the casting?
Stupid. Yes.
The casting.
Yeah.
The casting, and you know exactly
because the whole reveal about Michelle and MJ. Mm-hmm. I can talk about that later if you want. But you know when it was rumored that she was going to be playing MJ, I saw a lot of crap online about, well, she can't because MJ has to be a redhead and, you know, she's too dark skinned and she can't play MJ. And I'm like, you didn't have a problem with Nick Fury, so I don't want to hear about it.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah. And this is, and you know, whatever aside, you know, this is the best written Flash Thompson we've ever had. Like,
yes.
this guy, like, is in Peter's face, is bullying, yep. is the jerk. And yet I loved every minute of it because I'm like, finally, we get to see a high school bully to Peter that, you know, that we can sort of all sort of relate to.
Oh, yeah, because it was more of a modern take of Flash, too. Because, mm-hmm. you know, yes. you don't have the bully that you saw back in the Stan and Steve days.
Yeah, he was kind of more like a Reggie from Archie rather than a real thing. Like yeah. like he wasn't like, because they didn't go with the jock, right? That Flash usually is in the comics. He was a, you know, football star or whatever. But so you get this sort of, you know, sort of rich brainy kid. So he's more that way.
I got the feeling that Flash, because they mentioned that one of the coaches mentions that he's the fastest man there. So I have a feeling that more than likely, if he was a jock at all, he was on the track team.
Oh yeah.
Well, as his teacher says, as his teacher says, though, it's one thing to be fast, but that's always you're not always right when you do that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I had the feeling that he was probably an athlete, but they made him a runner, which I'm totally okay with. The fact that he was a DJ just kind of told you he was a party DJ. Which just told you everything you needed to know about him. And I apologize to any DJs that are listening, but you know I'm right.
Sorry, Q.
Yeah. But I mean, I thought, you know, I liked the Flash Thompson character. I liked the academic bowl teacher.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he was awesome.
Great at a bunch of stuff. He was I loved him in Knocked Up. Judd Apatow's pregnancy movie. Mm-hmm. He was one of the roommates.
Oh yeah,
and constantly stoned. So I'm looking at him the entire time. I'm like, you know, he had a beard in that movie too, but he looks different in this one.
Well, I loved it when they were at the Washington Monument, mm-hmm. and Michelle was going to protest,
Oh, yes.
And she said, why are you protesting? Because this is built by slaves. Oh, it wasn't built by slaves. And the guard was like, going, it was the little things in this movie that
there's a lot of subtlety.
Yeah, exactly. And that was what was great about it.
And, there's a lot of humor, obviously.
Yeah.
Something I'd really appreciate with you guys had touched on this a little bit was just how they really nailed the high school feeling of these characters. Mm-hmm. I think more so than any of the previous Spider-Man movies we've seen. It really felt like these were real kids with like the awkwardness, the teenage hormones, the bullying, the everything. This kind of, it felt like a real high school experience. And we actually haven't talked about Tom Holland as Spider-Man too much yet, but I thought he did a really good job of just nailing this character, just his excitement for being Spider-Man and just how much he felt like an actual relatable teenager. Spider-Man is probably one of the most relatable superheroes just because he's an ordinary kid who's trying to grow up and kind of come to grips with his powers at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's how Spider-Man originally was. And, you know, and that was great because Peter's motivation in the comic books, especially in the early years, was taking care of Aunt May. He was all, that's how he, you know, after Uncle Ben was killed, he always felt like he was responsible for supporting Aunt May. Now, he got the job at the Daily Bugle and, you know, was doing the photography to help support Aunt May. In this, she didn't need that kind of supporting because she was a younger character. Yeah, she was
getting free food.
Yeah.
Yeah, she didn't need that kind of support.
She didn't need any kind of support. She was getting hit on by everybody guy in the film. That scene in the deli, where mm-hmm. they're speaking in Italian about his hot Italian aunt, mm-hmm. and Holland responds with "How's your daughter?"
Yeah,
it's that just was like, awesome. It's just like, did he drop the mic afterwards? What happened there? That was such a great moment, and it Boom. Showed you. It showed you the kind of comedy and the kind of smart aleckness that mm-hmm. we would see with him wearing the mask.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was great. Here's the thing with the MCUs, and I think you guys all agree with me, every one of these films is a different genre. With Captain America First Avenger, you had the serial. With Winter Soldier, you had an espionage film. With Thor, you had your fantasy film. This is a John Hughes movie.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It just happens to have, you know, Michael Keaton flying around in easily the coolest set of wings ever.
And that's one of the reasons, you know, and I say this every time a Marvel movie comes around, but I mean, this is one of the reasons why the MCU is so successful. They're not making superhero movies. They're making good, solid genre movies with good writing and good acting that happen to have superheroes in them.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
And it did answer one question that I've always wondered about in all the different Spider-Man movies. What happens when Spider-Man goes to suburbia?
Yep. And that was right out of the comics, I believe.
Oh, it yeah, multiple times. But I love how they parodied Ferris Bueller in it too.
Yep,
that was a nice moment. And yeah, I love him going back to get his book bag and finding out it's been stolen.
Yes.
Yeah, these are definite things that, I mean, they're little things, but they're things when you're reading the comics. I mean, Peter has bad luck, and you know, I mean, a lot of it. I mean, he has a good heart, but man, things just don't seem to go his way. And I definitely got the feeling that this movie really hit on that without it being feeling too contrived. You know, it didn't feel too set up. It just felt like all these that you felt bad for the kid because all these things were happening to him.
I didn't feel terribly bad for him. He got a churro. And I love the fact that churro gets brought up twice in the movie.
Yes,
because he hangs up the phone. He goes, "Why did I mention the churro?" And then later on, Tony Stark says, "You know, why aren't you just protecting the woman who's getting you a churro?" which is a great line. I gotta say the nuances, the little shout outs to the fans, are really solid in this film. One of my favorite, we haven't mentioned it yet, but Donald Glover's character of the Prowler.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
What a terrific performance by him. And I missed it and wound up talking to one of the guys at the theater afterwards when it hit me. Why did he not want those weapons in the neighborhood? His nephew lives there.
Right. Right.
Miles Morales.
His nephew is Miles Morales.
Exactly. Yes, which is just beautiful. But I wasn't aware of it didn't kind of click with me at first. And it was on the drive home that that line came back into my head and went, wow, that throwaway line just put Miles Morales in the MCU.
Well, yeah. I mean, you don't That's cast great. You know, Donald Glover to play a part that is only going to be in like one scene and is never going to be seen again. Two scenes. You know, that's a character that you know is going to come back. And while we're on characters that you know are going to come back, of course you
Not
may
the
know.
First shocker.
No. That's true. That's true. Now, I am a huge Better Call Saul fan, and I knew that Michael Mando, who plays Nacho on that show, was in Spider-Man, and he was playing a villain of some sort. And, you know, I tried to figure out what it was going to be, and he said that he had a hoodie with this character on it. So I was trying to figure out, oh, what hoodies are available, different villains and stuff. And then right before the movie came out, he said, I'm playing Scorpion. And so I was like, yes, okay, cool. He's going to be in this movie. He was in the movie for about 45 seconds.
Yeah.
he was on the boat, you know, and you just see him for just like a very, very short period of time. And so when the credits started to roll, I was pissed. And I got out my phone and I was in the middle of writing a tirade about this is so not cool. How could you waste Michael Mando on? He's such an amazing actor. And then the mid-credit scene comes up and I'm like, oh, okay, I'm good now.
Now you are happy.
He's in it for two more seconds. Thank you.
Well, but it's very clear that he's going to be, you know, a bad guy in a future film.
He could be. I mean, obviously they could use Scorpion. They may not. I mean, I hope they do. Scorpion's one of my favorite guys. So if they use him, but I did like the fact that all of Toomes' henchmen, so you speak, were Spider-Man villains. I mean,
yeah,
they
were
Tinkerer.
Named characters.
Yeah, we had obviously Shocker. We had two Shockers. I think there's two of them actually now.
Yeah.
And then we had the Tinkerer, and then of course, yes, Scorpion. So yeah, they all show up, and I thought that was pretty cool.
And I love the fact that Tinkerer got away.
Mm-hmm.
Tinker got away, which means that we could easily see him popping up in other places.
Oh yeah.
Well, then there's the whole issue of whether or not any of these characters will ever be seen in the MCU again.
Yeah, there's that.
Yeah.
So
my guess is that, I mean, obviously Sony's probably going to keep it a little tighter than that. You know, I would imagine that going forward. Well, it's interesting because it just says Spider-Man will return, so it doesn't give you any sort of indication as to what the plans are, but we do know that he's going to be in at least one of the, I think, the next Avengers movie.
Mm-hmm.
So that's awesome. I doubt any of his supporting cast will be, or certainly any of his bad guys, but certainly going forward, they've got enough here that we don't need to see any of the other MCU stuff, really. I think they've got enough to build on now.
Oh, yeah, big time.
I mean, it would be cool, but don't get me wrong. Look, if they cut to the jail and, you know, and it just so happens that Michael Keaton's cell is next to
it's Seagate, right?
You know,
exactly.
I'm going to be like, oh yeah, look out! No, those two working together.
I was absolutely looking to see if there was any indication at the end that they were in Seagate prison because I'm like, oh yes, right down the hall from Trevor Slattery.
they all kind of put them there, so that would be cool.
Well, exactly.
But some of the other stuff, I don't know if I was, you know, as keen on. I mean, obviously I think the one that kind of got to me, that kind of I was like, that's not that respectful, was the Betty Brant reference, because Betty's a really cool, beloved character among Spider-Man fans, and they made her out to be some ditzy blonde that didn't know what she was doing or whatever, or didn't have and I just didn't care for that. That sort of was flat for me. But and then having Ned be his best friend, that's a different Ned than anything that we've ever seen in the comics, but yet it kind of works. I think
actually,
it worked pretty well.
The Ned stuff was kind of right out of the Ultimates universe.
Miles Morales. It was Genki Lee.
Exactly. Because basically, you know, Miles had his friend Genki.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
And Ned was right in that role right there.
Yeah.
And I thought it fit perfectly because Peter is the same age that Miles was in the alternate universe.
Plus you do have to have someone for him to talk to, and obviously, you know, they covered that with A, with Ned, and then B, with Karen, is that what he named
Karen
her? the voice?
Yes.
Yeah.
Jennifer Connelly. That was amazing. I was like, oh, okay. All right. I have Jennifer Connelly rolling around my head. That's awesome.
And let's face it, Ned gets off the best line in the movie.
When he explains,
I was looking at porn. Because you could see him. The best thing about it is that scene hits and she's like, what are you doing? And he goes, and every guy in the room went, he's going to say he was looking at porn. Because that's just, you know, if you're going to lie, make the lie sound believable.
Exactly.
You know, and that was there's not a man on the planet that at some point in time did not have to use that line or come up with something upon aside from that. I've heard. But the moment he hit that line, I clapped because I thought, yes, that is a sidekick I want.
And that is the thing that you say. And they're not going to ask any more questions. They're going to immediately drop it.
They're going to be like, OK.
And I loved it because he became the computer guy that he wanted to become.
The guy in the chair.
That's the guy in the chair.
I was almost disappointed that he became the guy in the chair because I'm tired of guys in chairs and stuff. And I thought, oh, this movie's making fun of that. That's awesome. And then he becomes it. I'm like, oh.
Well, he became the guy in the chair and he realized just how much he didn't like it.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
he was just like, okay, I've done this. I'm good with not doing it anymore. I did like the scene where he tried on the mask, though.
That was cute.
Oh, sure. And there he is wearing the mask. And at no point in time did Peter look at him and say, take that off. Because they're just friends. That's just what you do. Yeah.
Exactly.
If Peter had been wearing the hat at the time, that'd have been awesome.
Speaking of other comic references, one that didn't work for me as well as I would like, and I think this is when I realized that Uncle Ben's presence was missing, was there's a scene where he's trapped under all the debris.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and it really taps into a very, very famous great Spider-Man story in it's around issue 33, something like that, by Stan and Steve, and it's where Spider-Man is buried under a bunch of stuff and all this debris, and he's got to save his Aunt May, and that's what gets him to move the weight that's on him. And it's really, really powerful. It's like I said, it's one of the greatest comic stories in Spider-Man history. And I thought it was great that they referenced that, but his rationale for getting, like his motivation for getting out of it, it didn't work for me as well. And now I will admit, maybe it's because of my bias, because I'm familiar with the original material. And for me, that's his love for Aunt May is more powerful than, oh, I just need to be a man or whatever that means. Like I need to be like, it's not about the suit or whatever they were trying to portray here, but maybe for other people who are not familiar with that, it might've worked as well. So I don't know.
Yeah. I would say for me, I'm not as familiar with the original comic, something I would still like to do in the future. So that scene actually really worked for me. I did like that he was really struggling and felt trapped and alone. Then he had to learn that he had to do this on his own for himself and he didn't need a suit. And that's another thing I also appreciate, that he had the final fight with Vulture in his homemade suit, that it was just about him learning to be the hero just as him. He doesn't need Stark's fancy suit. He doesn't need anything else if he just can find the power within himself. So that is something it really worked for me, but I can totally see if you were kind of expecting something else from the comics lore, I can definitely see how that would feel a little bit different.
There was also something missing from the movie, was the spider sense.
Where was that?
Yeah.
That's actually been discussed. Paul Feig indicated that he has spider sense. They just chose not to use it in such a dramatic way this time, which is to say they forgot that he had it. going back real quick to the collapsed building sequence. One of the best visuals on that is him looking at the pool of water that his mask is in, because it's in a clouded area on one side, and that's the side where you see him. And then the other side is the mask. And that's a classic, you know.
Oh, yeah. You used to have that all the time.
And I like the fact that they did it this way, as a way to have him sit there and say, I am Spider-Man. I am more than just the suit.
I am Spider-Man.
Yes, the truth is, I am Spider-Man. And then we cue the Ozzy Osbourne, or the Iron Maiden music. And we go. Mm-hmm. Or it's Ozzy. I'm sorry. Music, and we go from there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was good. Yeah, there the lack of Uncle Ben. And again, I'd like to see a scene in which May, like maybe extend that scene where, mm-hmm. you know, she's furious at him and just have her say, you know, I've lost Ben. You're the only family I've got. If I lost you, what would, you know, and then he could sit there and say that he lost the Stark internship and she instantly becomes the caregiver again.
Mm-hmm. Now come the wheat cakes.
Yeah, but I honestly feel like the way that she's portrayed in the movie is that she's putting up a front,
mm-hmm.
that she's trying to hold it together because she's having to care for a 15-year-old.
And boy, was her world blown at the final scene.
That was awesome.
That
was so good because I even sucked in my breath when you know it panned to that moment and then she drops that line.
What the fuck?
And then it goes straight to Blitzkrieg Bop.
It was awesome.
And that was a great way to end the. Well, it's a great way to end that portion of the film. I like the bumpers, mm-hmm. and I feel that the final bumper was either the greatest bumper ever or the meanest troll ever.
It can be both.
It can be both. It can be both. I thought that was sheer genius.
It was brilliant.
We had about 30 people stay in the theater. And of course, you know, it comes up and he sits there and goes, patience. And I started laughing.
Exactly.
And he goes, you know, sometimes it leads to something great. Other times, just something awkward. I'm clapping.
Yes.
I'm the only one in the theater clapping.
It was awesome. And I love the Captain America PSAs throughout the movie.
Yes.
Oh, those were great.
And I love the gym teacher. Yeah, I know he's a warm criminal, but I don't care.
Yes.
Yeah. We still got to show these things.
Yeah, exactly.
And that was Hannibal Buress. And Hannibal Buress did a great job in this film.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's every coach we've ever had in high mm-hmm. school.
Exactly.
I took this job because I couldn't get into the pros and I wanted my summers off.
Damn.
And I loved it because, you know, like, and then Peter, when he walks right out of detention.
Yeah,
and it's just like, and he just walks right out, and the coach was like, "Huh? What? Oh, yeah, whatever."
He's like, not getting paid enough for this,
exactly. And that was great about it. It was just a lot of fun, and that's what I wanted in this movie. It made me forget about those last two Spider-Man movies. Hell, the last three Spider-Man movies,
mm-hmm.
and that's what I wanted with it. I loved, you know, the little video diary at the beginning that he was doing. And you got to see from his point of view, the whole battle in Germany at the airport. Mm-hmm. Even got to see Giant Man. He was small. Now he's really big. Look at that.
Yes.
And it was,
great.
It was just awesome because he's a 15-year-old kid. And mm-hmm. that's what made it awesome because they played it up perfectly for that. The whole thing when he was stuck in that warehouse. And, you know, you thought hours were going by. He was learning all about all these different web features that the mm-hmm. suit had and everything. And he says, oh, my God, you know, I figured out all this stuff. How much time have I been here? 37 minutes. No. That's such a 15-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember the times of William on road trips. Dad, how much further? It's like, we just have to go to a mile to the gas station. A mile, that's forever, you know. Yeah. And that's what it just felt like to me. And so it was awesome. And
go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say something else I appreciated is that in the final battle, Spider-Man did not kill Vulture.
Yes.
I liked that mm-hmm. he fought him, he subdued him, and then at the point where he was down, he worked to save him and then mm-hmm. present him over to law enforcement for justice. I thought that was really key to the tone of this movie and this latest version of the character, that he's a teenager, he's working to clean up the neighborhood. He's not out here fighting villains that are threatening the future of the world like Loki. And I just liked that he didn't kill him. Just brought him to justice, and I thought that was a nice touch for the ending.
And it's a neat contrast too with Captain America, because we had these Captain America PSAs throughout the movie, and he's the other kind of Boy Scout good guy, but they have such different styles, even though they're both super good and want to bring people to justice and not kill them and things like that. You know, and even though Captain America is all, you know, no cursing and, you know, this very old fashioned kind of sense, it was a neat contrast, because Peter is so innocent. He is so adorable, adorably innocent in this. And, you know, and as the coach says, you know, at this point, Cap is a war criminal. He, you know, Cap has, you know, gone, he's had such an interesting evolution as a character too, but he has gone from being the, you know, lily white good guy to saying, you know what, sometimes it's not right to go along with the law. Sometimes you have to break the law to do the right thing. And so I just thought that was a neat parallel kind of thing there.
Yeah, the point where Peter tells Toomes, you know, but this is against the law, like it's wrong. Like he sounds so naive, but yet he's pure hearted. I mean, I like the fact that it doesn't even cross his mind to kill people. When the suit keeps wanting to go in kill mode, he's like, right. No, I mean, he's right away saying, no, I don't want to kill anybody. No. Like, I do question why Tony would put that even as an option in the suit. But, aside from that, I do like the fact that, you know, Peter's, all his reaction was like, no, I don't do that.
Well, I loved it when it went to kill mode, the eyes turned red. That was pretty awesome.
Did everybody enjoy the slam on Batman when it went into interrogation mode?
Oh, yeah, yes. The voice.
That was funny. That was really funny.
Interrogation mode may be the greatest thing. And Donald Glover just going, this is your first time doing this, isn't it?
Yes.
you're not very good at this at all.
No, and you got to get better at this part.
Yeah.
And that was the great part. It was just like Peter was so bad at doing all of this. And, you know, everything from the fight on the ferry, he was horrible at it. Or, you know, just even the fight that he was doing with the bank robbers.
Mm-hmm.
He was just, you know, he was still...
He's learning.
Exactly. He's still a little kid learning with these powers. And, you know, before Avengers or Civil War, he didn't even have... He had that other suit, which was kind of a throwback to... more of like the Scarlet Spider with the hoodie outfit. And it was just like, he was just a ragtag character. Mm-hmm. And that was, and then, you know, when he was like, you know, kept on trying to call Happy, and John Favreau was awesome in this movie, by the
He's
way.
He's always yeah, he awesome. Was. Yes.
And it was just great. You know, trying to get in touch with Happy the whole time. And it's like, hey, I'm just waiting to see I'm off doing stuff. And he was just like trying to waste time. And and then, you know, trying to stop that guy from breaking into the car. Hey, that's my car, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And
there were great. There were great, like small lines that if you weren't paying attention, you would miss during the bank robbery sequence. Spider-Man says, hey, Thor, Hulk, great to meet you. Because they're not in the fight scene in Germany.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which I just thought was brilliant. I thought that was great.
And I love Stan's cameo in this also.
Stan's cameo was a delight.
Hey, I'm beginning to think you guys aren't the real Avengers. That's Spider-Man. It is so Spider-Man.
Exactly.
I love the fact that they were able to. And, you know, I guess we have, I don't know, I think it would have come. I'm surprised that it took them 6 movies. And I know that Deadpool is probably a lot of people will say that Deadpool is probably the reason for this, but it took them forever to figure out, hey, we can just have this eyes animate his eyes and give him reaction, like that would be enough, because I think all the actors felt like they couldn't joke or they couldn't whatever because they were wearing this mask. But I mean, the character, of course, Deadpool proved that you could have a great character without seeing the face. And he would be funny and all that. And that's what we needed to have a good Spider-Man.
Well, exactly. And that was one of my downfalls with the very first Tobey Maguire Spider-Man, is the one scene where they had Spider-Man and the Green Goblin talking on a rooftop and they're both in masks.
Yeah, it was awful. That was horrible.
Yeah. It was just like, no. Nope.
Especially since the Goblin's mask wouldn't even move. I mean, that was a horrible, horrible design choice, I thought.
Making a mask that wasn't as frightening as Willem Dafoe.
Yes, right. That's a tall order, my friend.
It is a tall order, but if you're going to have Willem Dafoe as your villain and he's got to wear a mask that makes him look scary, make the mask scarier than Willem Dafoe. Because honestly, Willem Dafoe was a hell of a lot scarier as Osborn than he was as the Green Goblin.
Yes. Put a green tint on his face. Done.
Done.
I would love to see a Green Goblin that actually looks like the comic book Green Goblin.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't know if that ship has sailed, but we can only hope. I mean, who knows what they'll do for this franchise.
They've said that they're not going to do a Green Goblin in the foreseeable future, which I think is fine because we've seen it a couple of times, and you know he's got a huge rogues gallery, and definitely you know we've got plenty of time to look at some different ones. Yeah. Please on the other hand,
please do it before introducing any clones, though. My God, please. We'll go back. Let's have Osborn back before we go to clones.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, there is a rumor, and this is at the completely unsubstantiated stage, so I hesitate to mention it. But of course, Tony, you know, we saw in this Stark Industries is moving out of Avengers Tower, and they're moving to their compound upstate. And well, who's going to buy that gigantic piece of really distinctive real estate in the middle of the city? And there's a lot of speculation it's going to be Norman Osborn.
I want it to be Winston Fisk.
I want it to be Baxter. I want it to be the Baxter Building.
Ooh,
I've heard that as well.
I doubt that'll happen, but damn it, that's what I want. I want a Baxter Building in the middle of New York in my MCU.
I'm fine with it being Fisk's home base of operations.
You never know, my friends. All right, any last thoughts before we go ahead and rate?
Can I just say that I thought that the action sequences with Spider-Man were fantastic. I mean, the director really did a skilled job. I mean, we've seen, this is our sixth one now, so it's hard to kind of wow us with his abilities. And yeah, there were certain times where it felt a little like there was too much CG or whatever, but on the whole, I thought they used his abilities in ways that we hadn't seen on the screen before that were exciting and really felt like that they were doable. Like they were just like, yeah, that's something that he could do. And they really pushed his powers to the limits in ways that we hadn't seen before. And I really appreciated that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree with what Mike said. That's my biggest gripe about the movie, I guess, is that there were a significant number of scenes where I looked at it and I went, there are no human beings on the screen right now. You know, it's just completely CG, and especially when you've got somebody as talented at acrobatics as Tom Holland is, it seems like it's a shame to write so many scenes that have to be done as CGI and can't be done with practical effects. Because when you think about it, the way Spidey moves is very unnatural, you know, like being able to crawl up the side of a building and like jumping around and stuff. But unfortunately, when you basically animate that, like when he was going up the side of the Washington Monument, I just kept looking at that and going, just that's uncanny valley. That doesn't look like a person. That looks like I'm watching animation. Mm-hmm. And that's my biggest complaint, is that I think that that's just a gripe across the board, is that I think there's just so much reliance on CGI. And I get it. You want to tell stories that are very hard to actually film without using CGI. But, you know, maybe construct your story in a different way so you don't have to have the last showdown on an invisible plane.
Wonder Woman was probably going, wow, an invisible plane. That's a great idea.
Right.
What a great concept. How did their movie get an invisible plane? Although that said, we might have just not seen the invisible plane in the Wonder Woman movie.
Exactly. I think it's been there. It was almost in every shot. What do you mean? Exactly.
It was the biggest star of that movie. What do you mean? All right. Let's go ahead and rate 1 out of 5 stars, 1 being the worst, 5 being the best. All right, Ashley, I read your review. You're going to go first.
All right. Well, I was really excited about this one. I left the theater with a big smile on my face, which is kind of funny because back when Sony had first announced they were going to do a reboot, I was kind of like, you know, with a lot of fans, like, really, guys, you know, we've tried this. This is the third time. Do we really need another one? But I really, really enjoyed this one. I thought it was fun. I appreciated that they kept it on a smaller scale. The whole world's not in peril, but it's just kind of a coming of age story for Peter, and the villain felt like it was good. It was on his level, something that he could take on without needing to call in the Avengers. So just really enjoyed this one. I'm going to have to go with the 4.75.
Wow.
Nice.
All right, Jen.
I'll go with a 4.5. I thought this was an excellent movie. We had the most well-developed and interesting villain in the MCU movie side that we've had so far. Loki is a great villain, but he also got to develop that character over the course of three movies. This is the only time we have had a movie villain who just nailed it right out of the gate. And some of that is having a really great actor in the part, and Michael Keaton did a fantastic job, but it's also very good writing. That scene when they're in the car, just before he leaves to go to the dance, that was so brilliantly written and so brilliantly acted. I was tremendously impressed. Just a fantastic supporting cast. I thought I went into this very skeptical, and I was extremely impressed. My biggest complaint is my biggest complaint is the CGI. I also think the MJ reveal that Michelle is actually called MJ, and then before the movie they had denied that she was playing MJ, and then after the movie they came out and said, well, her initials are MJ, but she's not necessarily Mary Jane Watson. So I'm not happy with how they're handling that, but that's trivial. So 4.5. I was very happy.
Okay. Alex.
Okay. First things first. At this time, I would like to change my rating score that I gave to Wonder Woman. Because I did not treat that film as well as I should have when we did the review for it. So I'd like to officially change my Wonder Woman score to a 4.25 because it had something that Spider-Man did not have. And it had a wow scene. Wonder Woman had no man's land. This movie, unfortunately, despite all the good that it's got, does not have a wow scene. It does not have a scene that makes you go, that was awesome.
And it's because all of the scenes that could have been like that were full of CGI.
Right.
Well, I think to me, the scene that should have been was where he lifts the debris off him.
Yeah.
Because when you read that in the comics, that's how powerful that is. Mm-hmm. And that's what they were going for. And they just missed it.
It didn't happen. I think Michael Keaton's Vulture is absolutely the best, most rounded villain in the cinematic universe from Marvel. I think that the little touches in this movie are excellent, but it's the seventh appearance of Spider-Man on screen in 15 years. It's the third Spider-Man in 10. I just feel burned out on the character. Did I enjoy myself? Yes. Was it a good time? Yes. Could I have waited to see this on FX? Yes.
Wow.
I give the movie 4.25. But Wonder Woman's the better film.
Okay. Mr. Mike.
All right, so Batman, Spider-Man, for as long as I can remember, have been my guys. So, but I will say that even though I didn't hate any of the any of the Spider-Man movies that we've gotten previously, I know it's weird, but I didn't hate any of them. I still felt like I was not as excited as I wanted to be, based on the last two or three entries. They were serviceable, but not as exciting as I knew the character could be. Once he was introduced into the MCU, I mean, look, Homecoming is the theme of this movie, but it's also an off-screen thing saying, hey, this is Spider-Man back in the MCU where he belongs, at home, you know?
Yeah.
And he feels at home. I mean, there's still some things missing. Like I said, the Uncle Ben stuff, I really think is important to his character, and I wish that had been included more. I think it could have helped a lot, especially in that scene where he's lifting up the debris. I think we could have gotten an iconic moment there if we had gotten that part of him, if it just had, you know, reached down and gotten a little bit more intense. But that said, you know, his quips, his abilities, his humor, him in high school, his nervousness around girls, his nerdiness, his you know, competition, or if you want to call it that, is being bullied by Flash. I mean, that's all there, and it works so well. The fact that he, you know, he's trying to do the right thing, but things keep happening to him that you just, you know, that he's just like sort of a sad sack of comics, of superheroes sometimes. And I thought that was all there. I agree with Alex that there could have been that iconic moment, and because that's missing, I'll give it a 4. You know, I do want to see it again. And I probably will, because Michelle said she wanted to go to see it. So, and I said, hey, it was good enough that I'll see it again. So on multiple viewings, which I do intend to watch this multiple times because it was that good. I think it's been the best Spider-Man movie that we've gotten since 2. It might be better than 1 and 2. I'd have to really just sit down and really, you know, look at it. But I think it's a great start for the future. Look, the Spider-Man franchise, as Alex already mentioned, has taken a big hit. So much of a hit that they really felt that they needed Tony Stark, in particular Robert Downey Jr., to bump this movie back up to get people excited. So I think now that the training wheels are off, so to speak, I'm excited for where this franchise can go.
Kill mode.
I'm very excited to see where the future of this franchise. I love Tom Holland. I love the rest, the everything else about this. The franchise is in good hands.
Okay. Awesome. I'm torn because there were a couple things I didn't like about it. I overall liked the story. There was a couple parts halfway through where I felt like it was going a little slow, and actually was looking at my phone once or twice, just to see, what time is it? You know, that type of thing. But I enjoyed Spider-Man. I thought characterization
How many minutes have gone by? Only 37?
Exactly. Oh my God. And
I wonder if Alex is out of his showing in the next theater over.
Exactly, because I heard you laughing. Ha ha ha.
Yes.
Because
he's boisterous.
Exactly. He had his private showing. You know, he basically runs that place anyway. So, but it was interesting, and I did like the characters. I did like the character of MJ a lot. I thought Michelle was awesome. I thought she was nice. As you know, kind of like, hey, you guys are nerds, because you know, like when they were at the school and they first introduced Liz and stuff, and they were all Peter and Ned were both staring at her.
Yeah,
and it's like, you know, you guys are being kind of obvious here, you know, because you're losers, you know, that type of thing. And
she was very much the Ally Sheedy character from Breakfast Club.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly a great way, and I love how she was the one who pulled it out at the competition. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did like that. That was the only thing I really liked about her character. But she didn't add much. Obviously, she's building to the future, but.
Mm-hmm. But I loved it at the end, you know, like, where are you going? And he was like, I got someplace to be. He says, I don't care. You know, I like that. You know, there was fun things about it. And, you know, I'm glad they didn't have the Daily Bugle or anything to deal with J. Jonah Jameson or anything yet. You know, let that be in a future, you know, movie. You know, eventually it will, because that's part of the Spider-Man mythos. And I just am very, you know, hopeful now after the last two, you know, Electro and whatever else they did in that one before that. I don't even remember. And then not even going to talk about the Venom and stuff like that even before that. No. But I enjoyed it. I liked the characters. I liked Tony. It showed basically he still had the idea of keeping the Avengers together after this whole thing, you know, and they showed it, you know, and I love the scene at the end, the little thing, you know, when they were offering Spider-Man the new costume that he earned the right to be an Avenger and everything. Yeah. And he says, oh, this is a test, isn't it? And they were like, oh, you got us. And there's not really people on the other side. And they were all full of reporters and everything. And Pepper was there.
And a nice cameo by Gwyneth Paltrow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. I love that. So was Tony proposing to her then, you know? So,
well, they were on a break the last time we heard. So,
So it was interesting, and it was fun. And that's what I wanted from a Marvel movie. And, you know, very curious. I like at the theater I saw, they did have the preview for Black Panther.
Oh, it was so amazing.
And I didn't see that. It was pretty awesome. And so, you know, I think we got some good stuff coming up. And so I'm going to give a 4.5. I really enjoyed it that much. And even with the looking at the clock and with my phone, it still made it, you know, a 4.5. And it definitely is going to be in the own collection. I think the kid is great. And I'm going to be curious to see how he grows with Peter Parker.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then anytime you see Aunt May curse, it's perfect. So we want to hear from you guys at home. Please write us esopodcast@gmail.com. Let's take a quick break. Angela's next with her Geek Girls Take and then the Con Report.
Welcome to a Geek Girls Take. I'm your host, Angela, and this week this Geek Girl is talking about upcoming conventions that I'm super excited about. Now, I go to a lot of cons. Some I work, some I'm a guest at, and some that I staff at. I haven't been to a con as an attendee in years, and truthfully, I don't know what I would actually do with myself if I was an attendee. There are a bunch of cons coming up for the end of the summer and the start of fall. Some are small, and some are really big cons. Starting with this weekend, July 14th through the 16th, I'll be at Congregate, a small sci-fi literary con in High Point, North Carolina. I'm going to be playing a ukulele concert and doing panels and talking about my unofficial Doctor Who cookbook. After that, I head to San Diego Comic-Con to work a booth all weekend. If you're there and want to say hi, then check out my Instagram that weekend. I'll be posting where I'm at in the mornings of the con. I'm actually super nervous about this con, and I've never been to something that's bigger than Dragon Con, so this is going to be really, really crazy for me. After that, I have Dragon Con. I love Dragon Con. I will be working this year for the first time ever, so it will be totally different experience for me. Normally, I'm press, and I'm covering the con, and I'm cosplaying and doing all that fun stuff. I'll still be cosplaying, but after the dealer's hall is closed. If you're at Dragon Con, you should check out some of the panels that the Earth Station 1 crew are on as well, because, yeah, we're all awesome. A week after DragonCon, I'll be at Potterverse, which is a Harry Potter convention in Baltimore, Maryland. This con is run by the same people who put on Regeneration Who, and it's going to be a blast. They have such a great Harry Potter guest list, it's going to be so much fun, and I actually think out of any Harry Potter con, they have way more actors than most of them, so it's going to be really, really cool. After that, I have New York Comic Con at the beginning of October, which this will be my first time there. I'm super excited. I love New York City, and it'll be really fun to work a con that so many of my friends just like rave about and say how much they love. So that's going to be kind of cool. I'm not really sure what else I have after that, but I'm pretty sure I'll have one or two more before the end of the year. Well, thanks for listening to A Geek Girl's Take. What will I talk about next week? Well, you're going to have to listen to find out.
Welcome back. Now it's time for the ESO Con Report.
Well, here's where you can find ESO Network folks over the next couple months. Actually, there's not a lot to talk about. I wish there were, but I don't have any events planned in July or August yet. That means I'm available, people, and so is Mike Faber. So reach out to us if you want us to be part of your conventions, but Angela, a good geek girl herself, will be appearing July 14th through the 16th at Congregate, also known as Deep South Con in High Point, North Carolina. And she will also be at Otakon, which I believe is in Washington, D.C. I believe that's the way you pronounce it, Otakon. She will be at those shows. So if you're attending those shows, you plan on attending, please reach out and say hi to Angela. She's got her ukulele around. She might play you a tune. But the rest of us, we're all planning to be at Dragon Con. Mike and I are guests this year once again, and we are very honored by that. There are also a lot of friends of the station, a lot of people on the ESO network that are guests as well. So it's going to be a pretty exciting time. We're going to be gearing up for that through the month of August. So that will be take up most of our time. But if you've got a convention that's going on in the next couple months that you want us to help participate in, or you want us to help promote, please reach out to us because we love talking about conventions.
Actually, Mr. Mike, just hot off the presses, I know Geek Girl herself, Angela, has just messaged me and said she is going to be at the San Diego Comic-Con.
Ooh, awesome.
It's her first time
all about it. Nice, nice. So that's cool. We do have some other friends that are going to be there as well. So we're definitely looking. Unfortunately, Mike and I can't make it to San Diego this year. But if we've got some other people that are out there that want to talk about their experiences when they come back, if they survive the experience, please reach out to us because, yes, we love talking about conventions, but we really also love talking about San Diego Comic-Con.
So that's going to wrap up another episode of the Earth Station One podcast. I want to thank everyone for joining us this week. It is great to have Mr. Mike back from the wilds of Alaska.
It is great to be back. As always, it's my pleasure.
And so now that you're fitting back into the groove, and anything you want to shout out about, sir?
Yes. Well, I already gave some shout outs to the in my rants and raves about the cruise itself and the trip itself, but I have to thank good old friend of the station, Rebecca Perry, for keeping our fur kids all happy and healthy and fed while we were gone. Look, it's not easy to take care of our little colony, and I give her mad props for taking on that responsibility, and she did a great job. It was nice to see our kids healthy when we came back, and I can't thank her enough, so thanks, Rebecca.
That's awesome. And, of course, Jennifer, thank you so much, my dear.
I am always happy to come up and talk more Marvel stuff.
Oh, yeah. Anything you got going on at MCU?
Well, we've got our own. Earlier this evening, I taped our Earth Station MCU Spidey podcast, and that will hopefully be coming out right around the same time as this episode does. And other than that, we're on a break because we've got we don't have any TV or anything, but we will be back in the fall. I'm super excited. They've just cast the new Squirrel Girl, and it's the AT&T girl from the commercials. Yeah. And she looks like she's going to be a lot of fun. There's a ton of TV exploding this fall, so I am really looking forward to that.
Yeah, you even got Inhumans coming up.
We do. I'm not so sure about that, but we'll be talking about it regardless. But that
don't worry, you've only got the one season to worry about.
That's very true, and it's a short season too, which does not bode well. But yeah, so there's Inhumans on IMAX, so there's that to look forward to.
Oh joy! All right, Ashley, thank you so much, and for folks, check out her Spider-Man review. She did a great job knocking it out of the ballpark.
Oh, well, thank you. I sure appreciate the chance to come on the show and also to post reviews on the website.
Anything you want to shout out about?
We'll just keep blogging my way through the summer. Next up is War for the Planet of the Apes this weekend. Yes. So I'm really excited to see that and write about that. Hopefully we'll have a good report to bring back.
Exactly. So awesome. And of course, Alex.
Always a pleasure being here. Yes, I just waved at the computer again.
Of course. Hi, Alex.
Because that's what I do. I had a great time. It's always a love the banter on the show and the back and forth, because a lot of great opinions for this film. And I think everybody's going to enjoy themselves.
Very awesome. Very awesome. Thank you as always, my friends. My shout out real quick is going to the movie Baby Driver. Awesome movie. Went to go see it after she saw Spider-Man, and total thumbs up. Loved every second of it. And folks, if you want to go see a fun action movie, but smart and it has quirky jokes and just a lot of fun, take a peek at it. And you might actually see some places that are very familiar if you're in the Atlanta area. It's like, oh, wait a minute. There's where Dragon Con is. That's where Dragon Con is. Okay. It was really fun. And did you guys actually notice in Spider-Man, the Marriott?
That was one of those scenes that was in the sizzle reel for San Diego Comic-Con and got picked up for some of the previews. That shot was used of him swooping down, but not in the Marriott. That was a background that they just used for that promo, and no, it was not used. Yep. Yeah. And it was not used in the actual movie.
That's awesome. I was looking for that. But recommend Baby Driver if you get a chance to do it. So that's my shout out. So we'll be back again next week when we take another look at the movies, and we are going to look at War for the Planet of the Apes. So it should be a lot of fun, and this is hopefully going to live up to what we saw for the first two movies. And, you know, when we were talking about it for our summer movie preview, this one got high picks. So Knock on wood, we'll be lucky about it. If not, we'll be talking all about it anyway. So with that being said, of course, we want you to help support the station. Do have bad news. The ESO Amazon store is going away. Amazon is discontinuing their e-stores. As of August, we are not able to put merchandise anymore up there. You'll still be able to go to the store until, I think, October. So, if you know, we'll still have the link up there until then. But there just won't be any new merchandise and such. But, you know, please help to support the station. And we still do have the Amazon link, which will be good permanently as of right now. So we're still brought to you by the fine folks at Amazon.com. And you could just go to ESOpodcast.com/ESO Amazon. Every time you go there, help support the station. Bookmark it. Let's do that. And as of this taping, tomorrow is the big Amazon prom day. So should be very interesting to hear what they got on sale. I know Judy's already been trying to spend my paycheck on it. So so I think that's, you know, a good thing. We want to hear from you guys. ESOpodcast@gmail.com. Call us at 404-963-9057. Love to hear from you. And with that being said, my name is Mike Faber, and we will talk to you here soon on the Air Station One podcast. And we're done.
Poor Peter Parker was pitiful. Couldn't have been any shyer. Mary Jane still wouldn't notice him. Even if his hair was on fire. But then one day he went to that science lab. That mutated spider came down. Oh, and now Peter crawls over everyone's walls. And he's swinging all over town. La la la, lady da. La la.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek. classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.